that will lead to the entire report, set forth, and the first quarter. Let's talk those issues that relate to the, I will come back, that relates to the overall of the vision, which is set forth, and the first quarter 2015, but also the issues that generally do not necessarily be specifically on quarters, but could be a pattern issue that we would want to deal with that. So I just want, not to say I'm taking away all of the members from making a comment, but I think it would be more appropriate that we first look on the third and fourth quarter. Obviously, it happens to be issues that are arising from the third and fourth quarter, and they come again on the first quarter 2016. It means we just treat those as a bye, not as a bye-bye.
Not a cricket bye.
Well, that one was a short version of goodbye. This one will pass. Remember, third and fourth quarter? Not going to limit you on those ones. Honorable Matala, Honorable Piganini, Honorable Lorema, Honorable Makulu.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I wanted to check with the chief of the department, Mama Lisa.
I thought it sounded that I was disturbed when I went out. I know I'm afraid. Mr. Kapel, I'm not sure whether it was only my eyes. When you were dealing with your steps, especially around the rights matter, I tried to look at my own scripts that you gave me. I couldn't find none. I tried to look at the screen here. I couldn't find none. I could look at all the different faces. I could see all of them. They were like someone who had taken a wrong train. In their faces, they were so surprised. Now, I want to make it short, because it's not only on this side. Can you please, so that when we deal with matters arising at whatever given moment, give us that information in writing? Because I think it's the duty of the committee members. Because now, even if we're to ask, I'm sure we'll get a little bit of talking about 2000 something, and then the next thing you say, no, you know that when people give you any information, no, that is not about this. I was talking about this one. Every time you read something, no, you are quoting the wrong number. Often I was saying, and that is this one. So I think we can dispense that. It does not necessarily mean, obviously, when honorable members with clarity on those issues, they will not. But I think it would be fair enough to have that information substantially at their own disposal. I think I must deal with that issue first before we go into teaching. Okay, continue, honorable members.
Thank you, sir. One relates to the transfers. How much bonuses was allocated to MINTEC for the Pirelli and Bonalis mines on behalf of the EMR? To Chair, I'm not sure as to whether the department will be able to give us breakdown of the 28 million that was spent on research and regulatory requirements for increasing shale gas exploration and hydraulic fracture. I'm not sure as to whether I will be able to give us the breakdown today, but if you don't have, can't. you are not forced to give us nothing today, Mr. Mshisa. Maybe in the next meeting, we can be able to get at a breakdown of the 28 million that was spent on the research on regulator. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wish to really welcome the report, Chair. You know, they were so impressed the way that it was packaged. It moved from point A to point B, you know, and it's quicker to go through the Chair. The issue, Chair, the report is really not very much about the rehabilitation program and the managed plan so far. We know that that program is a nightmare one, but we need all the time to be updated about it. The second one to add in the issue of self-care, it becomes important that we really get the report, how far are we on self-care in terms of exploration. Are we really navigating our challenges to the sister departments that we work with in this program? You know, really interested in this particular program because in our own understanding we knew that it might be really a game changer. So we really make sure that we reflect that. You made mention, you see, this one is in the link, is in quarter one, but it's in a link. You see, there are X minus that we have to find. You know, where somebody has to get something at the end of the day. I think we need to have a plan. And I think that plan must have a time frame to be. Because this is an open-ended. You know, some of those people are no longer alive now. But I think their families need those resources. So I think it's that dynamic. Because I think they are coming from the poor and working class background. And so we need to deal with that. In terms of 60 labor beds, I'm dealing with all my... In terms of 60 labor beds, it can't be just be about compliance now. I think we need to develop new strategies. One, we might have a minimum, if we just comply, it always we get fatalities and all of that. But if we have developed new strategies to deal with that, it will assist so that we avoid or we advert this issue of strategies that are taking place in this market. You know? So I think we need to come up with really, not only really, I have this thing in mind that if you want to comply, it's just a process match that you must do. But in my view, we need to be more proactive and preempt and deal with that. Because this zero harm facility, in order to achieve problems like that, we need to have that kind of rule of plan that we deal with. Thanks, sir.
I'm going to go through the slides in order, more or less. Starting with health and safety, slide number 19. The implementation of the certificate of competency model to improve the pass rate. Can you just explain what that means? Does it mean it's a different qualification? Secondly, on the numbers of injuries and fatalities, it's kind of a confusing picture because whereas fatalities have gone up by 9 or 8, injuries are down by about 200. Would it not be more an accurate assessment to give us numbers of accidents where injuries or fatalities occur? In other words, are the total number of accidents going up or down? That would be quite useful. on page 26, the training of air quality and waste management and environmental minerals also inspectors was provided to 60 officials. What have they achieved a particular qualification, and what are their new capabilities now that that's been concluded, that training? Following page 27, the figure of 129 closure certificates were issued. Does that mean 129 mines which are no longer mining? Can you just expand on that, please? Immediately below that, 127 notices were issued to rights holders who did not have adequate financial provision. Does that include, for example, prospecting rights? And on the same page, 27, 204 rival permits were issued to historically disadvantaged South Africans. Out of how many? We did get that list, which the chair has asked for on paper, but I'd like to see that concluded, please. On to slide number 31, he talked about engagements with communities. In particular, I'd like to find out about Tolobeni. I believe the Australian company has withdrawn. Is mining still going to go ahead there? And if so, under what circumstances? What's changed, I suppose, is the question. And also, just another one I'm quite interested in is Steelport. Have you solved this? And if so, how? I second my colleague's request for more information on where you are on shale gas, particularly on page 43, slide 43, you mentioned 8 consultations on such shale gas exploration. What does a consultation mean? And then on slide 45, there's also something about shale gas. Really what I'd like to know there is, what's next in the process? When do we see drilling and prospecting and indeed hydraulic fracturing? Are we waiting for the NPRDA to be finalised, or what is the... And then also the coal strategy. What's the coal strategy, and can we see? Okay. Fisher's call is step 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Let me first bring my colleagues to welcome the presentation that was given to us by the department and comment them on the financial overview, especially on assets and irregular expenditure. My question is on slide 19, where they are saying that they have done inspection on 7,589 and the audits. I want to know if those companies did comply, and if there are those who didn't comply during the inspection, what steps are taken. And the that one of the lessons has 38 learners. Last time the department looked at that there are 50 learners. So I want to understand if these 38 are completed, where is the remaining others? And this was a bit worried about the injuries and fatalities. What are those on place so that we can make sure that this doesn't happen, because if you see the reduction, it's very, very big of lessons problems. And then on page 28, there is a verification inspection. And then can you please tell us about the outcome of those verifications that are done? And page 43. It's small field mining which were held. Can you please tell us about the outcome of those workshops? Do they make an impact or do they assist? And in which areas did those small field mining workshops done? The enemies that were supported, do you monitor them after that, or do you only support them and use them? And if you monitor them, how often? Thank you.
One
Okay, thank you, Mr. President, honorable member. The colleagues will also respond on the question in terms of the transfers to Intech and also the breakdown of the 8 million full time subsidies. So I'll have to come back to the information on Mabuza and the CFO. And also the rehabilitation program, the money spent on the beginning of the interval. On the shares, yes, honorable members. There were regulations that were promulgated on the exploration and production of shale gas last year. And we've also received 5 applications through PASA, which we were processing. I think processing applications through PASA. As Mr. Mabuza indicated, we have been embarking on engagements with the stakeholders and also communities. Minister is going to certain areas. He went to Cradle earlier this year to engage with the communities there to highlight some of the benefits and what government is doing to deal with the possible risks, including on environment and also on safety. And we have also gone to other parts of the world. We've been to Canada, as I indicated. We have visited in entities that support shale gas exploitation. I mean, they've been there for almost 70 years, some of them. So to say, what can we learn? And locally, the committee that has been formed by government, that involves the Department of Mineral Resources, the Department of Environment, the Department of Water and Sanitation, the Department of Energy, the Department of Science and Technology. I intentionally raised those departments who came here that for us it's very key that first of all we do proper research before we start with the process of exploration or production. And hence it is very key in also guiding us in that regard. And there have been concerns that have been raised in terms of environment. Hence why I also involved in the Department of Environmental Affairs. Some of the stakeholders have raised the issues of the risk in terms of water. So the Department of Water and Sanitation is helping us in terms of what are the legislation that has to be dealt with. And with the FDST as well, they help us with the SKA project to say, you know, how far should we consider prospecting applications. And we also recorded it through the legislation that we did. Now, through this committee, we have constructive engagement. For some of the colleagues, I would say, for instance, they also went to the USA to look at how do they do shale gas exploration. So get some learning there. But what we've also decided to do, and which is very key, is we should not reinvent the wheel, so to speak. There's been a process of the ocean parties that have been followed, you know, to unblock all the barriers or the blockages. So we are collaborating as well through that process to say what can we in terms of research, in terms of skill development, you know, and all those issues. Now, one of the things that I must honestly highlight here is the current MPRDA bill, in fact, has some of the conditions or provisions that will enhance or assist with shale gas exploitation or exploration. And hence, you know, we did receive applications, but the applicants, like I said, but when are we? And that's our project, why I'm always raising this thing. To say, but when are we finalizing the matter? Because they are ready to put more money also in shale gas, including option on job exploration. Now, although in any way raised the issue of how do we deal with the challenges with other state departments, I think the last committee, we have agreed, you know, for instance, that environment will help us with environment, PST will help us with research and development and so forth. So there is really cooperation to be working together with the sister departments. But we also acknowledge the fact that it's very important that from time to time, if there's a need to consult with other stakeholders besides the government, we'll do that. We won't stop only with government. And with safety, the plant plans from Banan will also touch on some of the strategies that we are adopting in terms of, and we fully agree on the beginning, as to say, we can't only focus on compliance, we have to focus on the holistic picture. And the holistic picture for us, research is also important. Data on health and safety for us is very important. And they will also touch on what we do in terms of the council to really deal with this issue. But most importantly, the adoption of the research outcomes. Because we can spend money on research through the council or whatever entities, but if we don't adopt it or we don't have a mechanism of adopting it, it becomes a challenge. And some of these accidents, you can clearly see that if there has been adoption of technology by the mining companies, because they prevented some of these accidents and changes of the health that we are dealing with. In terms of the ex-mine workers plan as well, we fully agree. We must come up with a plan, okay, campaign. I must add that our deputy minister is leading this process. We collaborate also with the Department of Health and also the Department of Labor. They create programs that are there, including us tracking the process of payments. One of the things that one of the milestones that have been achieved through this process is the establishment of one-stop job centers, ready to try and help in tracking and to get to the ex-mine workers quickly than before. So, and also the compensation fund that we held was also trying to unlock some of the challenges that might prevent us to provide money there. And the Honorable Lorema, on the issue of GCC, Mr. Banambi will also touch on it in the model. The injuries, that basically I say in future must come up now with the total accident, including that is fatalities. I think that's what we have to. So in other words, injuries, fatalities, and accidents we'll look at this. The train of air quality, Mr. Rafael will deal with it, and also with the closure and the notices issued, and also with the HDSS. Tolobeni, we have also been engaging in Tolobeni. We went there, I think they have also been there, together with the police to engage with the community to say what are the challenges and how can we work together with them. There is still interest by the applicant. So we are working together on that particular issue. We say Rafa will touch on the support as well, he'll touch on it. And the issue of the coal strategy, Mr. Mabuza, Honorable Mafolo, on the inspection and what are the issues that came out. Mr. Mbonambi will touch on this at the 38 learners and why 38 instead of 50. He will also touch on that. Concern on the fatalities and just what we are doing. We've noted that. What does it mean, the verification inspection, Mr. Apena, and the outcome of the small scale workshops, Mr. Mabuza, and the monitoring of the SMMEs as well. Thank you. Can we start with Mr. Rapera, Mr. Mabuza, and Mr. Bonambi, and if this will add into the CFO.
Thank you. I'll start with the information pertaining to the rights, as the Honorable Chair outlined. Let me firstly also apologize. There will not be that in right for the benefit of members. And in that response, we'll also reply to the question that Honorable Lorima asked pertaining to out of the total population, how many the 204 in which it comes in. The other question that was asked related to the closure certificates and whether they cover mining. The closure certificates, we can make the information available, but they do cover prospecting rights as mining things, and then we'll check if there are instances where they have rights, but they do cover rights, but your mining permits as well as your prospecting rights. And the next question related to whether the orders that have been issued for inadequate financial position also include prospecting rights, the answer is yes. And that's why we have placed a premium on quality of verification inspections, especially in relation to protecting rights for renewals, to also ensure that we become tightened up in terms of ensuring that this area is better monitored. Around the clarification on the training on
of air quality, as well as the BLS from Environmental Mineral Resource Inspector training, and what kind of qualification that will come out of it. Honorable members would recall that we are implementing a system called One Environment System, which basically means an integrated permitting system, which integrates your environmental management in terms of NEMA, water usage, in terms of Department of Water and Sanitation, as well as the MPRD, so DMR. And there are new skills or requirements, especially in terms of NEMA, that have to be upgraded. And certain designations that officials are charged with the responsibility to conduct inspections, handle complaints, and work with the law enforcement agencies to avoid having to hand over matters or criminal prosecutions to so warranted, have to process to ensure that matters are done properly. But with regard to processing of your applications, there are additional listed activities that require different set of skills that historically belong elsewhere. So officials who complete EMRI training, which is Environmental Mineral Resource Inspector training, that's why it's at the university. Upon successful completion, are given the certificate, but in general have to be designated and given a grade, either grade 1, grade 2, or grade 3. That is the value of the training that's been provided. The other question that was asked related to additional information or an update on closing and whether mining will continue. The update on closing is that there is no mining at the moment. All that is happening is the applicant had applied for an extension to conduct specialist studies and has been denied access. And when time was approaching, then approached the department once again to apply for an extension. But the root cause remained in terms of denial of access to conduct those studies. Will mining continue? I think it will not be premature for one to indicate at this stage whether mining will continue or not. With regard to the announcements made by the Australian company, of course, they had made an announcement that they would like to exit and would like to make their interest or the shareholding available as a proposal to the local community. It is a matter that has to be engaged upon with relevant communities. And that is the way it is with regard to following. And with regard to Steelport, have we solved it? Firstly, the situation in Steelport still continues, pertaining to interventions to try and find stability and address the challenges that have been raised by the main communities, I must indicate, within the Steelport area. And we do that working together with the local and the provincial governments, as well as other stakeholders, departments, COCTA, amongst others, and the law enforcement agencies, and the leadership for the communities. It is a matter that obviously will take some time before it can be addressed, because it's got some complexity. So, in simple terms, it's not yet solved. The outcomes of, Honorable Mafua, outcomes of verification inspection. In instances, as I was outlining earlier on, where right holders are found to be compliant during verification, inspections that are conducted for compliance purposes, actions in the form of notices or directives get issued. And that becomes an ongoing process. And in some cases where it is found that the right holder is not compliant, the right cannot be removed. In that case, it gets refused. I have left some questions. Just come back to see.
Thanks, TJ. I think just on the resources relating to research undertaken on shale gas development, Honorable Matlana. Let me start or perhaps build on what the DG said. Only yesterday I had a privilege of attending a session of petroleum geology at the International Geological Congress. And I have never been more confident of the technical possibilities of oil and gas development, both shale gas and offshore. The global geologists were presenting cases on oil and gas possibilities all over the world, including the SADC, the SADC region. And on our case, one is quite delighted that our approach of taking a scientific-based approach is a correct approach. And so there is some amount that has been allocated to BASA to do ground geochemistry. So they sample the ground in various areas, do geochemical analysis, which geochemical analysis gives an indication of what is there and is part of the baseline studies, so that into the future, when we started with the development of the shale gas, we can go back and constantly use the ground research findings of today as the minimum that we have to make sure that our monitoring and evaluation resets the conditions back to where they were before shale gas developed. So it is quite an important study that BASA is doing. The second part is allocated to the Council for Geoscience, and there are three aspects to the study. They need to drill a minimum of three holes, drill holes. One very deep, possibly around an average of 3.5-4 kilometers, so that they can do a geological, a more detailed geological characterization of the Karoo Basin. And also an understanding of what is called brackish water, which is very deep, salty water that cannot be consumed by people. It is normally occurring at depths below 1-1.5 kilometers. And there's always been this question of where would the water come from, because shale has consumed a lot of water. So it's very important that that hole is filled so that we can see, one, if the water is there, two, what are the quantities of water that are there, and whether it is a viable option for us to use brackish water for the development of shale gas. So this research will be responding to those kind of questions. The other two holes would be for water purposes, so that we drill and understand that in this area, what are the levels of groundwater, how much groundwater, what is the quality of groundwater in that area. And all this research would also be contributing towards the Department of Environmental Affairs-led strategic environmental assessment, which is at the advanced stage of its development. And so that's effectively where the money is. So are we ready? When are we going to start exploring? I think that one has been covered. We are engaged with the petroleum companies. And the only thing that is waiting on their part is finish the MPRDA. We know that we have the necessary expertise and regulatory setting that we need to mobilize investment. And so they will be ready to start with exploration, and exploration will then determine the next phase of drilling and the further phase of possibly hydraulic fracturing. And so it won't, hydraulic fracturing won't be the first thing that happens. There has to be first the general exploration, and then ordinary drilling, which is happening throughout the country anyway, and only after those two phases have gone through will we be ready to then go to the next phase of possibly hydraulic fracturing, having learned from the experts with decades of experience who have been willing to share with us their knowledge and their expertise, legislation, environment, technology, fiscal instruments, and so on. So we have learned a lot from our global friends with experience. Okay, and then on rehabilitation program, we developed, I can't remember where we appeared before the committee on the rehabilitation program. We can certainly make that information available. It may not have been this committee at the time. But we developed a strategy on rehabilitation as a department with an implementation plan. And key in that strategy is that there is a ranking mechanism for the risk associated with the derelict mines and mine sites. And the first biggest category being the asbestos mines. South Africa banned asbestos mines in, I think it was 1998. So it's a banned substance in the country. Some of these mines are very huge, and they require huge amounts of money to rehabilitate. And practically, they are not doable within the financial year. And so some of them you can finish within several financial years, not only on financial accounts, but also on practical and technical realities of rehabilitation. But we also have these mine sites like old shafts and old diggings, shallow in Johannesburg and other areas in which community members fall into those old holdings, and that immediately becomes a risk that closing of such a mine site takes a very high priority for us, so that we can provide for the necessary safety, health and safety, as well as environment of communities. And so we then prioritize the size based on the inherent risk, based on the availability of financial resources, and based on technical capability that we have when we are managing the entire risk going forward. I think the next one I have is on coal strategy. Honorable, it has been done, and we are beginning to socialize it with our stakeholders, and we should be able to bring it through to Parliament at the right time. The workshops on small scale mining, we try and spread them through the entire country, in all the nine provinces of the country. We target the poorest of the poorest areas. We share information, policy information, processes of application for mining permits, and the fact that mining permits have now been made a little bit bigger and exclusively for the South Africans, SME development. As well as bringing in the MQA on training and skills development, bringing in financial institutions with possibilities to assist with the financials where they can. The one thing that I can say is an immediate outcome, Honorable, is that especially for illegal diamond mining, we have a plethora of illegal diamond miners, particularly in the Northern Cape area. And these workshops, together with other interventions of the department, especially for mineral regulation, are assisting with the legalization of illegal miners. And that area is improving. And our view is that as SMEs are beginning to appreciate the benefit of operating legal. And so our intention is to broaden that benefit throughout the country so that everybody can really begin to see that it pays to operate legal in the country. And yes, we constantly monitor the SMEs that we support, because at the moment we are not providing financial support. And so we constantly engage and go back. And in fact, for our small-scale mining units, we have allocated resources in each of the provinces attached to work together with our coalition mineral regulation, so that and their primary function is to provide that necessary support to the SMEs that we are seeking to develop and hopefully they can grow to be independent. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. In response to the question around ex-mine workers that needs to be found by Honourable I think Mr. Sisa has tried to respond on that one, but if there's any further issues, we can try and assist. But I would agree more with the statement made that we need to have proper safety plans that will help us to fast track our journey to zero harm. As Mr. Sisa has indicated that through the Mine Health and Safety Council, we have looked on the quality of research that we have conducted over the years and its impact in terms of influencing health and safety of mine workers. In that regard, we as stakeholders came up with the decision to improve our research and also get value and in terms of ensuring that the outcomes of research gets to be implemented by the mines. And that's why we come up with the Center of Excellence, which will then assist us in terms of ensuring that all health and safety research conducted specifically for the mining industry does give us the benefits. And also to that, we have also launched some culture transformation, because we believe that there is a requirement to improve in terms of health and safety culture amongst the workers in terms of ensuring that they protect themselves and refuse to do some dangerous work. And on the issue of a certificate of competence, Honorable Lorema, I think you wanted to understand what it means. the mental health service to provide that for one to be a supervisor or a manager or a mine overseer at a mine, you need to have some level of competency to be able to comply with the Mine Health and Safety Act. Then the law of the Mine Health and Safety further provides that for a person to hold those positions, you need to undergo this government certificate of competence, which is being administered by the department. Over the years, what we have realized is that there was an outcry in terms of the pass rates, and we then decided to come up with a model that will then assist in terms of ensuring that the managers and supervisors that are responsible at the mine do sort of, when they sit for these exams, get some assistance to obtain these certificates. So what we were trying to say here, we're measuring ourselves in terms of providing that assistance for the mining industry, basically because if we continue not to assist in that regard, we run a risk whereby you find that you are a manager with all academic qualifications but with no government certificate of competence, then you can't be able to be appointed as a manager or supervisor of mine overseer, a miner at the mine, as provided in the Mine Health and Safety Act. So what this measure was trying to address is to say we need to work together with industry in terms of ensuring that all people who are expected to be responsible for health and safety are indeed competent in as far as mine health and safety is concerned. Further to that, it then assists that if you have demonstrated, once you're found to be competent, to be diligent in terms of your performance, the law provides that this certificate can either be suspended or cancelled. So as means of ensuring that we encourage people to honor their responsibility on issues of health and safety. Honorable Kolo, on the issues of the inspections and audits that we have conducted, yes, indeed, we have found some of the mines to be compliant, but in some cases, we have found some of the mines not to be compliant. As provided in the mine health and safety, where a mine is found not to be compliant, there are instruments or tools that are available to the inspectorate, whereby an inspector has powers to stop the working place until such time that the remedies have been put in place to correct that non-compliance. And further to that, the law provides that whereby it has been clear that the employer has failed to comply with some of the provisions in the Mine Health and Safety, we can be able to impose administrative fines to the tune of 1 million rand for an offense that has been identified during the inspection and audit that is being conducted. On the issues of 38 learners, we really apologize that we did not really explain as to why that at the beginning we started with the 50 learners, and now we are telling this honorable committee about 38 learners. What actually happened, this was a two-year program that was embarked on so that we can assist the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate to have a pool of inspectors that they can be able to absorb because of the challenges that we have been experiencing in terms of the vacancies or attracting inspectors to the department. So the 38 learners that we have mentioned in our presentation, after the 2 years program, out of the 50, 45, five of the learners resigned from the program because of the job opportunities that were that came during that program, and they requested to be afforded to get that employment. And that left us with 45 learners, which successfully completed their training program early this year. So out of that 45, the 7 had also requested to say, because of the advancing their qualifications, they requested to be awarded some opportunity to embark on the studies, which is the BTEC, which will then assist them in future to be able to have degrees rather than to have diplomas. And out of that 45, 7 are currently with the University of Johannesburg pursuing a 1 year program to obtain their BTEC. That's why we just mentioned the 38 that we managed to absorb, who were prepared to go and do their mine manager stage or the GCC, so that they can be able to be qualified inspectors. Lastly, on the issues of fatalities and injuries, as we have indicated earlier on that, as a department, we are very concerned, or greatly concerned, with the continued loss of life of mine workers in the mining industry, especially at our gold and platinum mines. And the steps that we have taken to make sure that we turn these things of the issues of fatalities and injuries, in where appropriate, we have issued instructions to stop the mine and administrative files, as I mentioned earlier. And further to that, we have instructed mines to embark on health and safety campaigns for the rest of this calendar year, because we have started then in terms of the number of fatalities and injuries. As stakeholders, then there are currently health and safety campaigns that are taking place, whereby mine workers, as well as the state and the unions, come together and then do this campaign to make sure that the workers they can work safely and protect themselves. And further to that, what we have noticed that with all the efforts that we can put in this, it is important to put the power as provided in the miners and safety back to the employees, to ensure that each and every employee exercise the right to refuse dangerous work in the mine, at the workplace. That's why early this year we've gazetted a guideline for compilation of guidelines for prevention of procedures to ensure that mine workers, they can exercise their rights as provided for in the Mine and Safety Act, who refuse to do unsafe work at the mine. And we are popularizing that guideline and it was gazetted in February this year. We have also issued some directives because of this increase in the number of injuries and fatalities. As the chair has indicated that with the commodity prices that has shown some improvement, there has been some excitement whereby some of the mines will then return to the places that they could not mine when the prices were not that much good. And when they go to these places, we have realized that their risk assessments are not properly conducted, which then leaves us in a situation whereby they could access old workings that were previously mined and stopped because of the issues around prices. he reopened without proper risk assessment. We have issued these directives, and those mines that fail to comply with the directives, we have made sure that appropriate action are taken to address those matters. And we have also been engaging with the CEOs, especially in the platinum sector and the gold sector, to make sure that we understand their strategies in as far as addressing health and safety matters at mine, in light of this increase in the number of fatalities. And also written letters to the chairperson of the board of these mining companies that have contributed this number of fatalities, raising our concern and also requesting them, as they are the ones that appoint the CEOs, to make sure that they provide sufficient support to turn these things of fatalities and injuries that impact our mine workers. I think I will end up at that point. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Our question is by Honorable Mashala on the amount of steps to make it. For the GNO in the 2015 financial year, we have transferred 84 million. As Mr. Mabuza has indicated, these are project based and they sometimes take much years to complete. But when we did an analysis at the beginning of the year, they had reported that for the 2015-16 financial year, they've already spent 58 million on asbestos mine. So, mine rehabilitation. Then, on the issue of shale gas, we work with CGS on the site side of CGS. And Chairperson will remember that last time we had indicated that we had received an additional allocation for shale gas purposes. And for the current year, we have allocated 21.2 million to CGS.
Okay. The pace is slow, but it's okay. Honourable Brother?
A couple of follow-ups, Mr. Chair. Just getting back to shale. Is there any truth in the reports that shale is going to be moved to the Department of Energy? Checking on the baseline studies on water, you're talking about three holes, big holes. Peru is a big place. Are three holes going to be enough to get an accurate picture? The next issue is about the cancellation of prospecting rights. Now, in terms of the legislation, I think it's section 17, prospecting rights should be granted providing there is adequate financial provision for these prospecting rights to be investigated. If you're cancelling a number of these, it would indicate to me that, for the reason that they're lack of finance, it would indicate to me that these rights have been issued too easily without checking that people have adequate financial provision. And the reason that I think this is a problem is that what you can get is speculation on prospecting rights. So people will be granted a whole number of prospecting rights and they will hope to be approached by somebody who actually can carry out mining there. In effect what's happening is that the prospecting rights are generalized by the granting of these speculative of rights. So I'd like some comment on that, please. Mr. Mabuza, you're a master. When is the right time for us to call strategy? Just give us an indication. I mean, are we going to see it this year? What will determine when we will see it?
Mr. Chair, my questions relate mainly to the legal cases reported. Can I ask them now, or do you want to let us stand over?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On whether the shale gas is going to be moved as to COE, I think currently the United States has fully department. That's what we are aware of. But we see ourselves as one government, although we fall under the Department of Mineral Resources and I've clearly indicated earlier on that we work together with the other departments, including the energy department. In fact, it's our sister department we want to get everyone say. So, and we work together with all the departments. So all the programs of government work together and support each other, making sure that we achieve the mandate of government, including the NDP and the 9.9. And the other issues, on the three, the holes that have been, in terms of the baseline, some of those I can touch on in the other issues that were raised, as well, and prospecting that.
Thank you, TG. Honorable Lori McGee, the three holes are established. And you're correct, Karoo is a vast area. But just to give you an indication of estimated costs, to drill up to a kilometer depth, you're looking at not less than 7-8 million, right? But the task team that has been established has the Department of Water and Sanitation, which is the primary custodian of water resources. And they have the Water Research Council. And so these three holes are drilled with through a specific prism, which will enable us to use the findings of those three holes to integrate into existing information that existed purely through the prism of water and water management. And so these three holes are not intended to be a panacea for for the water and water related challenges in the entire Karoo. And there is start, and we think that the start that can really give us a quantum leap in obtaining a much broader and better understanding of the Karoo and how we can mitigate the associated risk very, very quickly. the coal strategy, would like for it to be if you can give us the time to engage with our stakeholders first, so that they don't hear about it the first time in Parliament, because we would like to bring it here after consultation with them, in line with our very well established practice of consulting with our stakeholders and such feedbacks. And yes, they are aware of its development, and we have been engaging with them, and we just like to take it back to them so that they can really make that final input into it, and then we bring it to you. Would it be before the end of the financial year? I would say that would be a bit of a stretch, but it's not impossible to bring it before the end.
Two quick questions relating to the calculation of the rights, as well as our comment on speculation rights. We don't encourage speculation in rights, with prospecting rights. As a holder of rights, you have obligations and you have a contract with terms and conditions that you have to comply with. Come time for renewal of your rights, the requirement is applying in Section 18 of the NPRD taken into account. And as a consequence of going through compliance with the principal right, which is your prospecting right in this case, around where you did prospect, and you are able to show results of the prospecting, and you also have demonstrated compliance with the environmental management plan, and you also applied on time and paid the necessary application fee. When all those compliance issues are taken into account and are found to be compliant, that's when a decision gets taken after recommendation to renew your right. But if the opposite is found, it leads to what we call the cancellation of the right, which you refer to as a refusal of your right, which comes to an end. Thanks.
Thank you.
and the same is done with the respect of the man in the right. Thank you.
Okay, honorable members, we have to move. Can we go to quarter 1, 2016? Any issues? There was an issue, I think, honorable Smith, on the cases decided pending.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to just refer to the legal issues, because that is indicative as to what the department is doing correctly or incorrectly, and or whether it is reacting to some of the decisions taken by the court. And I know there's been a very, very interesting and a very substantive document prepared and provided to the department, I would guess, in having them to answer it possibly by today. Now, I'm not sure that 1.5 page or 1 page document is justice to what the request was, and I'm not sure, I can't confirm whether they received it or not, but I would guess that the committee, which normally does its work, it was provided to the department. There is a number of cases there, about 15, 20, I haven't guessed, I haven't answered rather, which either allow me to go one by one, or we could take a resolution that the committee comes back with more full report and provide the answers to the questions which have been indicated in this document. And if they don't have the document, we can provide them, I'm sure, with a copy. But there's about, I would say, about 50 issues I'd like to take up. Now, I could either do now, or we could rather decide to defer it for a separate committee meeting, which I would prefer, because I can run through them, but it's going to be a tedious exercise, especially when you don't have the document in front of you. So I'm basically in your hands as to some form of guidance with it. We would prefer to have the issues answered now, or whether we'd rather have a different meeting deal only with these legal issues.
My difficulty, I'm not sure which document you're referring to, one. Two, I always say that take responsibility if there's ambiguity on a matter, and say we must also look at the nature of the information we're requesting. But if we want to re-attend to the matter, I don't think there's harm. But also, as long as, I also want to be sensitive on other issues. One, if we wish, because the manner in which also we requested the information could be the issue. And it's either also by communication that we forwarded, whether that communication would have addressed the issue. But I remember very well in the meeting, although we can't go back to the military, but among other issues that we wanted when they make the submission, I think there's one part I would say it's not related. We said among other issues they must include in the, and I'm not aware that we're doing justice and making that request on the quarterly reports, that is the third, fourth, and your first quarter. Because it might happen that some of the cases, we are not sure whether those cases fall within the third, fourth, and the first quarter. But we requested to say, in that information, please include the number of cases that the department has been attending to. But we never specified, except to say, what do they entail. We never specified in details what that means. Two things now, at least I'm talking to a lawyer, is that my difficulty is that on the pending, I understand on the decided cases, could be different issues. On the pending cases, I'm not sure how much prejudice they may find themselves in if we were to go to the merits and demands of the case. But if we're dealing with the nature of the case, that's a different answer. If we're to say give us the nature of the case, and whether the case is already enrolled or not, so that we can separate where I think there are cases of compliance, there could be cases, because I also want to move from the premise that, which I think is a debate of the committee, look at the cases, whether they are based on what we say fruitless challenges, or they would be based on the fact that there is a challenge of law. We'll have to deal with those issues in the final analysis. Because we also have to say as a committee, what do we want to achieve when we have got access to that information? What do we want to achieve? But I think for now, the difficulty we have, besides that I don't have the document even myself that you are referring to, but second, I'm not sure to what extent they will be prepared and ready. The risk is quite high that in that information that they might give us, we will follow the same route that Mr. Rapelle was saying. Give us more information, and you see, Mr. Rapelle was giving information, was looking down. Now, we may have that risk of not knowing what exactly is. Can I suggest that as soon as we finish here, it's not the matter, not close. As soon as we finish here, let me and you, Honorable Smith, let's look at it. Then, if we have to go back to them and say, these are the details that we want, let us do that. I'm not sure whether that will not cover you. And then when we go to them, we then try and come back with that information. But I would say, let's also open up space for them to also, not make a determination, share with the committee if there is a particular information that they feel that it may, I'm saying in inverted commas, because I know one of the battles that we have been fighting is that sometimes they don't come back until we are here, then they say the reasons why it was difficult to supply a particular information. We rather get that as part of the presentation if we want to take that presentation further. Honourable
Yes, Mr. Chair, I prefer that we do the matter more substantively rather than fitting. And the issues are, as you said, the one is some of the matters are decided, some of the matters are pending, and as long as the subjudicial rule is normally so widely interpreted that nothing can be discussed, not even the court can, name can be given, that are why it is sometimes incorrectly interpreted. But the purpose of subjudicial rule is just to prevent influencing the court from arriving at a certain decision. Okay? And I can't think that anything by reference to a court case and or the matters of the fact of the matter and or the relevance to the department or to the committee would in fact influence the court one way or another. I can't see it. But let's discuss it and then see if we can't have a more informed discussion, because it covers a variety of issues. Why certain environmental, one-stop environmental management system, court judgments on that, on decision item or internal appeals, all that kind of stuff. So it's not something which is just quickly enough to answer.
No, I'm partially in agreement with you. But also let's note this. I'm very, very skeptical. That's why even in the last week discussion, even on private matters, we must also accept, we must give due respect to that separate arm of the state. The risk for the committee that it can do is to go into detail when they decide the matter by court, and therefore express an opinion, which opinion runs the risk of being contrary to what, I'm not saying that's what we would do, but I think to me the best thing for the committee, that's why I said what is critical in that information is what do we want to use that information for as a committee. For an example, in some of the cases when you are giving, they may at least enlighten the committee members. I don't want us to debate the subjudicial rule, what does it mean? The subjudicial rule also means that you may take unfair advantage of influencing another person who may have an interest on the matter without giving due respect on the other individual. Let's make an example. The department doesn't take the advantage to influence a legislative arm of government on a matter that would not have been decided on. The party in dispute with the department would not have had the advantage of being in this house to also present their own side of the argument. And that whatever decision we take in terms of the merits, they disadvantage that individual or that party that is not given an opportunity. So that party will be within its rights to say, but you made and debate and deliberated on the merits, on a matter that we're party to. You therefore did not give us an opportunity to also present our side of the story. But I think if it's about information to the committee, let's make an example. This matter is about, let's say, like Honorable Lorena was saying, an unfair revoking of a mineral exploration right. And therefore, this is a matter that is in front of the court. That is, for me, that would be sufficient enough for the committee. Rather than to go to the details like Mr. Rapelle was going into. So I'm just looking. Some of the things I'm sure the committee will come to conclusion, if there are no different mechanisms between social partners or whatever the stakeholders, to resolve issues without making the cause of a determinant. Not to say it's wrong to take matters for the but are they so incapacitated that some of these issues will require or we need to look at mechanisms that part of the procedures and regulations they have, they should be more facilitating, which was an issue I was going to come to. But I say the point that you are raising. Let's just have that, that chart first, a better format. Let them come back at the appropriate time. I don't want to put some, for example, those things to detail issues. I can give an example now. We're dealing with the mining charter. When they present here, probably if something hanging between them and one of their stakeholders, can we say if that issue as if they related it to be, it's a matter that is on what you call this thing of your declaration or something like that. Can we as a committee go into details when you are I'm sure, when you arrive at the point you say, this one is a matter that is being handled somewhere else. They can only give us progress, how far they are, and we go into that level. Will that not cover?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We're not suggesting that we discuss the case and give an opinion. That's not a purpose at all. The purpose of it is to say these are the following cases. It has an impact on the department. Has the following steps been taken as suggested by the court? Yes or no? This is what the court advised. Disciplinary steps have been set in officials. Have this disciplinary steps been taken? Yes or no? Why not? It is an accountability measure. It is not discussing matters to say we agree or disagree. It has nothing to do with that. We can't interpret the court law, the court cases rather, the law.
No, it's okay. That's what I was saying. And we will look at that issue and how we handle it. That's fine. Now we've dealt with the, is there any general observations that members want to make in the overall submission that has been made for, third, fourth, because there will be cross-cutting areas that we think that they require to be offered. Honourable Lorimer?
Mr. Chair, just prior to that, just a clarification really on court cases. We heard that papers have been filed on the Scholes matter and ready for a date of hearing. Does that mean that heads of argument have not been filed?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, Honourable. Many heads of arguments have been filed by the applicant's calls, and I've had a discussion with the State Attorney yesterday. He said that our heads of argument has also been filed. So papers have now been filed, things closed, so we wait for the applicant to approach the Deputy Dutch President and, to sit down the matter for hearing and get directives from the court.
Okay. None other issues. Let me say this, and I decided to keep quiet. Only I'm worried. That's my personal opinion. In all the reports that have submitted, it's not an objection. Your high expenditure is on corporate services. You miss your targets. You even exceed them. Now, when I look, not that I'm singling you out, Mr. Rapela, and in fact all three of you, Mr. Rapela, Mr. Mabuza, and Mr. Banan. If you look in terms of your expenditure pattern, and it's going to go to the other part. Look at this. Corporate services. Just even if you look at the third and fourth quarter, corporate services has got an over-expenditure. The projection for the fourth quarter, as an example, was 261, then it's 263, the expenditure. That's the fourth quarter. If you go to the third quarter, the projected cost was 161, the expenditure is 203. Now look at the other following programs. Yeah? Even financial administration, The projection was 7, the expenditure would have been 52. So paid 7. The expenditure would have been 52. Write down 950, a critical arm. Projection 135, expenditure 129. Same, right through. Now, that I said, if we're to say now, in terms of your current services, your human resource capacity seems to be doing less than if we use a narrow version. You've got too much expenditure on your human resource capacity, but you've got little expenditure and an output of the purpose of their existence. Now I'm just saying that you have to find a way of making, because what it says, it could mean you are paying more for less outcome. But you're also, the department is fighting a dicey risk issue. You know the fight we had last time. There is absolutely no justification to have less expenditure on mental health and safety. There has to be an explanation, because that's very critical. If you look on the, I think it's an expression that is being made on the first quarter, also by the AG's office. There is a concern around the issue of the management and dealing with the issues that lead to illegal, especially the relation on a less mind. In fact, my worry with it is that the major expression of it may take us back to the Bloemfontein Supreme Court judgment. The one that talked about the need for a stricter legislation. I may not remember it quite well, but we dealt with that issue before. It was a matter that was based on a judgment on the legislation that is not strong enough. Now, when you look, I'm saying, when you look on your expenditure level, it at a face value, that's why I said, at a face value, might be presenting something, you are not getting value for money. But also, these are rich areas. If there is little expenditure, Honorable Mr. Mabuza, I don't think in the next few lives you are going to be honorable. Now, if you look on the issues, I want to be as open as possible. I'm not. Please, I was misquoted at some point. I was going to deal with that some other time. I'm not challenging any narrative that is out there. But there's no way you spend more on your social development objectives if you don't have a stronger base of economic generation. Now, both you and Mr. Rappel, it's policy development. Now, it says to me, if there is less expenditure on areas which are supposed to be income generating, then we can look at your healthcare, your education, but if you don't have a comprehensive research strategy, that is going to make sure that even the issues you talk, because my main worry is not that I'm disputing what, but I think it's trying to expand what we're saying. My main worry is that in the cutting off or reviewal or revoking of what you call this thing, your exploration rights, potentially you are actually killing the very same person who would have been contributing in terms of economic expansion. I would have thought that part of that policy development is more capacity related. So it is not about whether you've got a, because we have to look at who are those people that licenses are taken away and so forth. To me, it's not about whether this person has money or does not have money. It's about strategically what this person could potentially contribute to the economy. So that we don't have a size, one size fits all. So I'm saying that expenditure, I'm not saying this is the department, you must have a discretionary fund, that when someone comes in and says, I cannot afford it. But some mechanism of having fast and making a determination, I didn't get that. So my take is that looking at this and I say, okay, as a person who's making an accountability determination, Because again, the effectiveness of the program, I get worried sometimes when you make your targets, let's assume you make 20, you deliver 80. But the question is, what is the effectiveness? Becomes to me another. Unfortunately, also look at the Asian opinion, right through. There is a general complaint that the effectiveness of the program is what is becoming difficult. As the suggestion that says that must be measured against the industry itself in terms of performance. So if you, my advice would be that please go back, restart that, that exercise. But you are also shooting yourself in the foot. I must say, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Even for an expenditure that is so much on personnel, on corporate services, and very less on the actual programs that I would say they are operational in nature, the core activity, is that when you look at cost-cutting exercise, there could be justification why there should be another cut. But there could be a more need of demand. Mr. Maruza was scaring us, but it's a fact that a lesser expenditure in mineral resources is not something that we should just overlook it. It's something that we should, because besides generation of economic activity and more base, economic base, there are issues that are seriously respected. And we must be able to move from that premise so that tomorrow you don't address one problem, that's the creation of a bigger one. I can't get a sense sitting here, Mr. Bonan. With due respect, I'm not going to review the issue of leading money. I even made an example to say, if we ever made a hypothetical exercise, that in leading money, the incident from a distance, we're allowed that you have two people. Potentially, there were 75 that were under. 75, I'm correct. But there were 70 something that were under. But also, the incident happened, unfortunately, when we were already under. What could have happened if that incident had taken place at a point where they were all converging to collect their material of going underground? We could be talking worse than the thing that we are talking about. So I like the point that you are saying, it could be other factors that post, because we must look also on this capacity, because inspections could mean you just go there, you are taken to a lesser space. And when you go out, the after activity is no longer taking place where you ended when you do your checkup. So I'm that in my view is that part of the work that I would suggest you must be able to do. As you develop your EPPs as well as your strategy, please try to factor measures that you can be able to assist with, so that you can deal with the issue. Because if you look now, gold seems to be the major victim even in your industry when it comes to fatality. I'm not saying you can prevent those things, but there must be a better way that can be done. Otherwise, I think the report is, even the AG is saying, no, everything was perfect, except those particular observations that have been made. Unfortunately, I think also as a committee, it's a responsibility that we are having to really look at this issue of the related ownerless mine, to really look on this challenge that we are having of the illegal mining and its cost implications in the economy as a whole. That is a call that I'm sure at the end of the day is gonna make and be made to reflect on that. Honorable Smith?
Mr. Chair, that's why that legal presentation is so important, because there's at least two cases. There's two cases that both need to start developing either an act or regulations or something to ensure that illegal mining is a criminal offence. But Mr. Chair, if you don't want to have proper accountability, then we ignore that presentation, because that's the only way you can determine what the department really does wrong and where it's taking steps to correct that wrong. So you don't want that presentation, by all means, Mr. Chair. We'll be in the media. And if you want to have a proper discussion, let's just keep it, have their view on it known, by all means. Mr. Chair, I'm not asking you, it's a question, which, what do you want, a proper accountability measure from the department or not, it's up to you.
No. It's a good intervention, but it starts from an edge department. I thought we have agreed and we will work on that.
The only issue you raised is exactly what I want.
Yes, I'm saying it will come here. But I was raising those issues in the context of the report, how it's reflecting more on the overhead, comparatively on the operational programs that we expect in this budget. So I said, because there is no one who said we are not going to, we have closed that matter is going to be done. The issue that was raised, which you clarified, is not about the merits or demerits of the case. It was lessons to learn whether there has been compliance with some of these judgments that have been made. I think that's what we are going to do. It's not that. That's why I said, if there is a need, me and you, we can sit down and say, how do we give them this information that we need? So that they don't talk about the missing information when they're here. On that note, honorable members, can we now take you through next week? Thank you very much, Pabufiza, Nechi Marako. You've done very well, but are not finished. There are still outstanding matters. On that note, I'm sure Labusa's, unfortunately, we're not going to say Mr. Rappel, DG, you have made the commitment to submit information in writing, so please try and do so. I want to ask the question, not that I will deal with them, there was one worrying question where you talked about a workshop or whatever for users of Samra, but let's leave it with that issue on another thing.
Thank you very much. See you next week. Have a good Saturday.